You're listening to
a Mamma Mia podcast.
From Mamma Mia, hi, I'm Claire Murphy. Welcome to The Quickie, getting you up to speed daily. There has been a lot of conversation recently about net zero emissions targets, why Australia didn't have one, and what deal was done to finally get us there.
In an historic decision, the Nationals have agreed to a net zero emissions target by 2050. The breakthrough came a short time ago in a more than two-hour meeting of the party's MPs and senators this afternoon.
Today, we're looking at why Australia seems to be dragging its heels on climate action, why we keep being told we're one of the worst offenders, only to seem to commit very little to fixing it. And we find out whether we are as bad as we're being made out to be. Last month, our Prime Minister Scott Morrison was in Washington, D.C. He was focused more on the fact that he just signed the new AUKUS alliance with the UK and America, a deal in which we got access to nuclear submarines, but a deal that had also put us on the outs with the French government. But while he was there, he was thanked by US Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi on a matter that was a little unexpected.
We'll have a bipartisan meeting after we leave here. To discuss how we can work together on critical priorities. Of course, climate change, and thank you for your leadership in that regard.
It was unexpected because Australia is often considered to be one of the worst for taking action on climate change, and that off the back of this trip, our Prime Minister had decided not to attend the UN climate meeting called the Conference of Parties in Glasgow, better known as COP26. So how bad are we really? Well, the Climate Action Tracker is an independent scientific analysis that tracks government climate action and measures it against the globally agreed Paris Agreement aim of holding global warming to well below 2 degrees Celsius while pursuing efforts to limit it to 1.5 degrees. It's been providing independent analysis to policymakers for more than 10 years and just recently decided to downgrade Australia's performance to an overall rating of highly insufficient. They state that Australia's commitment to a gas-fired post-pandemic economic recovery over a green option, our refusal to increase 2030 domestic emissions targets, and not even being on track to meet the ones we actually do have in place as the reasons behind the downgrade. They say our government is intent on replacing fossil fuels with more fossil fuels, with little support for renewables. An example being a coal-fired power station in Port Kembla in New South Wales that will be replaced by a gas-fired one, rather than pivot to renewables and storage at a cost to the taxpayer of $30 million. Another gas-fired power plant will replace a coal version in the New South Wales Hunter Valley, funded through a government-owned company using $600 million of taxpayer funds. The CAT says that if other countries followed our lead with our inability to reduce emissions targets or reach the ones we've set already, it would put us on track for an increase in global temperatures of 4 degrees Celsius. While emissions have dropped in some areas, as discussed in a previous episode of The Quickie, this is not due to any government climate policy, a point that was also made in Tuesday's episode of the ABC's 7:30 report with Lee Sales.
We hear this line all the time about meeting and beating our targets. This is due largely to land use and forestry decisions taken by state governments. It's nothing to do with a reduction in the use of fossil fuels, which is the main factor driving global warming.
So why didn't Scott Morrison want to go to the climate conference in Scotland in the first place? Well, he told the West Australian newspaper that he'd been on a lot of trips lately and didn't want to spend any more time in quarantine, that he wanted to focus on Australia's COVID recovery at this moment in time instead. A BBC reporter told Prince Charles, and the future king wasn't impressed.
Scott Morrison, the Australian PM, isn't even certain that he could make it to the meeting in Glasgow?
Is that what he said?
He did say, yeah. He said he's spent enough time in quarantine. I mean, what would you say to world leaders about why they should come to Glasgow?
Well, that's what I'm trying to say all the time. And the point being that this is a last chance saloon.
And he wouldn't be the only royal unimpressed with Mr. Morrison's decision. The Queen caught on camera on October 15, discussing the conference with Camilla, the Duchess of Cornwall, and the presiding officer of the Welsh Parliament, Elin Jones.
"Extraordinary, isn't it?" she said. "I've been hearing all about COP. Still don't know who's coming. No idea." She went on, We only know about people who are not coming. It's really irritating when they talk, but they don't do.
Not long after the Queen's comments, the Prime Minister changed his mind about attending.
Overnight, I confirmed my attendance at the Glasgow summit.
The problem our PM faced then, though, was that he would be going to a climate conference without a net zero emissions plan in place, something he had to develop with support of the junior coalition partner, the Nationals, who've been very vocal about not wanting to increase any emissions targets, nor set any new ones.
We did say the Nationals have always been against a net zero emissions target.
Talking about a fantasy target of net carbon, net zero emissions by 2050.
Such as this ridiculous process of net zero emissions by 2050.
Net zero emissions are for everything for 2050. That is a job-destroying policy.
Net zero emissions by 2050. Collective action on climate change. Reducing carbon footprints. All of the woke virtue signalling.
Indeed, if I was a schoolboy right now, I'd love climate change because instead of saying the dog ate my homework, I could just say climate change did it.
After some back and forth and two epic Sunday sit-down meetings, the Nationals agreed in principle to a net zero by 2050 goal, not target. The details of the deal that sealed it are still to be revealed. Then on Tuesday, Mr. Morrison gave us the details of the plan, making sure we all knew what it was he was talking about.
Plan.
And who he was talking to.
Australians.
So what did we learn about Australia's new net zero emissions plan for 2050? Professor Mark Kenny is an Australian Studies professor at the Australian National University's College of Arts and Social Sciences. He's also host of the weekly politics and public affairs podcast, Democracy Sausage, with Mark Kenny. Mark, what exactly is our plan to get to net zero by 2050?
What we're taking to Glasgow is what's been described, I think, correctly as the price of entry, which is to have a goal of net zero emissions by the Australian economy by 2050. Now, let's remember that's the best part of 30 years away from now. No one who is in the federal parliament at the moment will even be in the federal parliament, let alone in government in that time. I think that's a fairly safe bet to make. So we've committed to that part of it, but what does it actually mean? This Glasgow conference, the core purpose of it is a pledging conference on interim targets, on the action that you're going to take now, what that's going to look like by 2030, on the path to getting the world to net zero by 2050. And we've sort of done the easy bit. We've made the easy bit look really, really hard in Australia. It's just been this knockout, drag down fight for years between the two political sides. Climate change has just been so politicised. And in a sense, I think this has been Scott Morrison's trickery here. He's made it really hard in the end to get to net zero. All the better for getting applauded for getting to net zero by 2050, when in fact the real game is about 2030, 2035. And I think if the world is hoodwinked into this, Boris Johnson has already called Australia's decision to announce a net zero by 2050 target heroic. Now, you know, let's give him the benefit of the doubt and think that's diplomacy at work there. That's Johnson as host of the Glasgow conference wanting to talk positively and encourage those who have not yet done so from doing so and so forth. Maybe that's the psychology there. But anyone can see this is anything but heroic, and it's also anything but substantive.
So a lot of the discussion is that there is actually nothing new in this plan that wasn't already in action, but also that it's basically more about technology-based results rather than taking any real action before then.
You're right. There's really not much has changed. I mean, I think the really pressing question that comes out of this is effectively Morrison and Angus Taylor are saying to the Australian people, are saying to the political debate, really, we were already doing this. We don't need to change anything. We were already doing it. Well, if you were already doing it, what has the argument been about for the last 10 years? It is astonishing. And as you say, a lot of it's based on technology, and a lot of it's also based on technology that doesn't even exist yet. I mean, there's 15% of the work in reducing emissions comes from global technology trends, whatever that means. There's another 15% that comes through further technology breakthroughs. And then there's carbon offsets as well, which is, you know, essentially buying credits for carbon farming projects elsewhere in the world. So if we're not going to legislate the target, and if we're not going to have policy instruments that drive investment into new areas, that preference and prefer investment in new areas, then what is the government really doing here other than saying we were already on our path there and we're just going to continue going, nothing to see here?
He just mentioned they're not going to legislate any of this. And there was a lot of talk about no legislation, no mandates, no one's being forced, we're not going to raise taxes. So how will anyone commit to it if they don't really have to do it? And how are we going to pay for it?
Not legislating the 2050 target is both a statement of values by the government. I mean, it's pretending it's for net zero by 2050, but it's not really prepared to put the policies in place and it's not even prepared to legislate that target. The government says it didn't legislate a 2030 target and it's going to exceed its 2030 target as outlined in Paris. Well, that looks to be true, but it's now going to be taking to this Glasgow conference the projection of what our emissions reduction will be in 2030. And we're hearing numbers like somewhere between 30 and 35%. So that's above the 26, 28% range that we pledged for 2030. But how seriously will the rest of the world take that? Why would they take that seriously if we're not even prepared to offer it up as a promise, as a pledge? We're just saying that's what we think we're going to get to, but we're not prepared to stand behind it. So why should they? I mean, this whole thing is, if you'll excuse the pun, kind of smoke and mirrors, really. And it's just a new chapter, really, in the climate wars that have bedeviled Australian politics for a dozen years, really, since the Carbon Pollution Reduction Scheme was voted down in 2009.
We're talking about smoke and mirrors. There seems to be a lot of secrecy surrounding this net zero emissions target deal. We saw in the lead up to the announcement that the Nationals got on board, but what was offered to them, other than we saw Keith Pitt elevated to a cabinet position. And then after the announcement, people asked what the modelling was that all of this was based on, and they said, no, not yet. So why the secrecy?
Good question. What is this modelling going to show and how robust will this modelling be? I mean, modelling is always controversial and we've seen it in Australian politics quite a bit over recent years in a range of different areas. So it'll probably be controversial when it comes out. Hopefully it will be fairly robust. Hopefully independent commentators will be able to look at it and say, yes, these are credible conservative assumptions about behaviour and about costs and likely trajectories of technology and the like. But the government's had plenty of time to get all this right. And what it's come up with is a pamphlet, an absolute tidal wave of platitudes and words, but there's no actual detail there. And even the modelling, as you say, hasn't been provided. And that does raise the suspicion that, you know, it's looking for the headline effect of this change and hoping that people don't get too bogged down in the details. And who knows, perhaps they'll turn out to be right. I mean, there's an election coming. This government feels like its main object at the moment, I think, is to neutralise this issue rather than necessarily turning it into a winner because the ground underneath it has changed so much. And maybe it'll work. I don't know.
Mr Morrison will now take this plan to Glasgow later this week to sell it to the other world leaders in attendance. But already he's facing serious questions.
Australia's premier technology guru, Mike Cannon-Brookes, from Atlassian, says this is just more BS. CNN says it's the weakest climate pledge of any rich country going to Glasgow. The New York Times says this plan is built on hope and little else.
Well, I reject all of that because, I mean, there are people out there who want Australia to tax people, put regulations on them, shut things down, stop Australians doing things that are lifeblood of rural and regional Australia. We're not doing that. We don't have to do that. That is the big myth that is exposed. You don't have to shut Australia down for us to achieve our emissions reductions.
That's Mr Morrison on the Channel 7 Sunrise program. Angus Taylor, our Minister for Energy and Emissions Reduction, has also been under fire for the lack of detail given and some of the claims being made around this plan. Lee Sales asking what, if anything, about this plan is actually new.
We've been developing policies to support this plan for several years, whether it was the King Review, the Technology Investment Roadmap we put out in September last year, the reforms to the Clean Energy Finance Corporation, the refunding of ARENA, the reforms to the Clean Energy Regulator, and so on. And the point about this plan is that whole suite of reforms that we've been announcing over several years now, with $20 billion of funding focused on a technology portfolio that can bring down emissions across our entire economy, that plan today made the point that those policies will get us within range of net zero by 2050.
So what you're confirming puts us in a position there, Minister, what you're confirming there is that there's nothing new in it. So Australia's going to be going to Glasgow saying we're not doing anything extra or new.
So will this plan be seen as Australia making a real effort to tackle climate change? And what impact will it have at the conference? Emeritus Professor Will Steffen is a Climate Council spokesperson and climate change expert based at the Australian National University in Canberra. Will, what does COP26 hope to achieve, and how will our new plan be received within that, you think?
I think what they hope to achieve in Glasgow at COP26 are commitments from countries around the world to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions at a rate that will keep temperature rise to within the Paris climate goals. So just as a reminder, those Paris climate goals were to limit temperature rise to well below 2 degrees and to make efforts to limit it to 1.5 degrees above pre-industrial. Regarding our recent pledge of net zero by 2050, there are a couple of problems with that. One is it's still extremely vague as to how we might possibly meet a net zero by 2050. And second of all, the science is pretty clear that net zero by 2050 is too late. Globally, we need to aim for net zero by 2040. Here in Australia, we could actually do a bit better than that and reach net zero in mid-2030s. But however you cut it, one of the focuses of the Glasgow COP meeting is going to be on near-term targets, that is 2030 targets, because again, science says quite clearly that if we don't get our emissions down very deeply, by that I mean at least 50% by 2030, we're not going to have a chance of meeting the Paris climate goals. So I think the Glasgow meeting is going to bring the emphasis forward from 2050 up to 2030. So that's the real challenge I think we face now.
Will, why are we so bad at this compared to other people who we would consider to be sort of on our level economically, politically? Why do we seem to be performing so badly?
We're performing badly at the national level, I think, for two reasons. One are simple political ideologies. Unfortunately, when the Gillard government and Rudd Gillard governments attempted to make this a bipartisan issue, it wasn't. And it became a partisan political issue. And I think that's created the toxic environment we have today. And the second major point is vested interest. The fossil fuel interests, of course, do not want to see vigorous action on climate change. And I think they have a strong influence on the government.
One person who knows more about the state of the planet than most is legendary environmentalist David Attenborough. He told the BBC just a few hours before our net zero plan was revealed that there are still people in Australia who say, no, of course it's very unfortunate that there was that forest fire that absolutely demolished, incinerated that village, but it's a one-off, meaning he believes they're still in denial that catastrophic weather events and fires are anything to do with climate change. But he says the time for avoiding global warming is over. It's here, and it's now on us to do something about it. Whether our net zero by 2050 target goes any way to achieving that remains to be seen.
Please make no mistake. Climate change is the biggest threat to security that modern humans have ever faced. I don't envy you the responsibility that this places on all of you and your governments. We have left the stable and secure climatic period that gave birth to our civilizations. There is no going back. No matter what we do now, it's too late to avoid climate change. And the poorest and most vulnerable, those with the least security, are now certain to suffer.
This episode of The Quickie was produced by myself, Claire Murphy, and our executive producer, Siobhan Moran McFarlane, with audio production by Ian Camilleri.
Mamma Mia acknowledges the traditional owners of the land we have recorded this podcast on, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander cultures.